Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
Is that the door?
Oh, don't worry, it's just the actors.
My Uncle Baldric was in a play once.
Really?
Yeah, it was called Macbeth.
Actors are very superstitious. On no account mention the word Macbeth this evening, all right?
Why not?
It brings them bad luck and it makes them very unhappy.
Oh, so you won't be mentioning it either?
No. Well, not very often. You should have knocked.
Oh, knock, you impertinent butler. We're loud enough to wake the hounds of hell. Lead on, Macduff.
I shall.
Lest you continue in your quotation and mention the name of the Scottish play.
No, oh, never fear, I shan't do that.
By the Scottish play, I assume you mean Macbeth.
Potato, halt the stores, blunt we may come in.
What was that?
You were exorcising evil spirits. Being but a mere butler, you will not know the great theatre tradition that one does never speak the name of the Scottish play.
What, Macbeth?
Hot potato, officer's horse, but we may commence.
Lord, you mean you have to do that every time I say Macbeth?
Hot potato, officer's horse, but we may commence.
Will you please stop saying that? Always call it the Scottish play.
So you want me to say the Scottish play?
Yes!
Rather than Macbeth.
Hot potato, officer's horse, but we may commence.
Say, what is all this hullabaloo, all this shouting and screaming and yelling blue murder? Why, it's like that play we saw the other day. What was it called?
Macbeth, sir?
Ah!
Hot potato, officer's horse,
crack will be commenced. No. It was called Julius Caesar.
Oh, yes, of course. Julius Caesar. Not Macbeth.
Potato, officer's horse, crack will be commenced.
Fantastic. And hello to you. It is minutes after the hour of one in this, the month of July, in the year of our Lord 2010. Thank you for coming by and making a part of your listening day. Here's a little secret. I'm not really here. It's also Tuesday. Plus, it's like 6 o'clock at night. Something like that. We have actually pre-taped today's installment of the Rick Emerson radio program. It is actually Tuesday night as we tape this here. So, so there you go. We're only going to mention that maybe once or twice. So if you're not listening right now, you really won't know that. And then we're going to do things later on that may seem confusing. But that's less my problem and more yours. In any event, so this is a pre-taped installment of this program because as I speak these words to you now, I am on the set of Leverage, presumably. Unless I get there and it's some zany mix-up where they really want Rick Emerson, the Coonhound guy, from Alabama.
There's a Coonhound guy?
Have I told you about this? He has a kennel?
No.
Oh, I'll tell you a whole thing. No, there are two other Rick Emersons. There's a guy who he raises dogs. He has a kennel in Alabama. And I swear to God, it is like the domain that he settled on is like rickscoonhounds.com or something. And then there's another guy who's a realtor in, I think, like Fairbanks, Alaska or some crap. And one of them, I won't say who, one of them is always real snottily trying to get my domain name from me and then sends me scathing emails, sends me hate mail whenever I register Rick Emerson as the username on some other form of social media. It's a whole long thing. He and I have a long history.
Yeah, there's a real estate woman who owns DonTaylor.com and just annoys me horribly.
No, this reminds me to tell you the Facebook story with this guy. He's a piece of work, this Rick Emerson. Well, in any event, so I'm off doing a little bit of filming on Leverage today, and so that's why we are taping this last night. I don't even know what we're talking about, but the point is, here we are. Coming up today, we'll be doing the second half of the top five that we started on Tuesday afternoon. That's going to be the top five live shows that Dawn Taylor herself has witnessed. The top five live shows, live concerts that she has attended. We've got a Clown Watch coming up, Geek Watch, Taser Watch, on the way. We're talking to Kelly Clark from Willamette Week, who's going to be calling us here in just a moment. We got a little part two, a sort of follow-up to our Mad Men recap. All of that is on the way. Don't forget these and all the other fine segments of our radio program are brought to you by a passel of folks, including Michael Beatty of The Cleaning Solution. The Cleaning Solution can be reached at 971-533-3211. So more on that here in just a bit. So that's all on the way. We'll talk a bit about the live stream, the Rick Emerson mobile stream, which is up and running in beta form, and which you will have access to. We're going to sort of open it up to everybody in the immediate future, but right now we're just soliciting some folks to do some testing for us on that front. So we'll do that here in just a bit as well. Don Taylor is tracking the following headlines for you on this Wednesday.
Two objects floated away from a spacewalk. A rampaging cow was shot to death at a state fair. And other stuff. Oh, thousands of bottles of wine were dumped onto the highway in McMinnville.
And other stuff.
And other stuff.
Normally, I'm the one who traffics in vagueness, and you have a delightful, refreshing specificity to your news tease.
I know. Not today.
How you feeling, Don?
I'm feeling good. Feeling great.
Anything you'd like to talk about?
Such as?
I don't know. It seems as though you're juggling many things on your mind. And admittedly, you're a bright gal, and so there's a lot going on in there all the time. But well, it seems as though you're.
As we did mention earlier, this is actually last night, so it's been a long day, and I might be getting a little goofy.
You might be getting a little punchy on me. All right.
I'll play Dennis Miller for you.
By the way, just before you do that, so people can get some context to the sound. So one of the first item of decoration that I brought here to the studio, because I was at Office Liquidators buying this chair, which is really one of the greatest purchases I've ever made. At Office Liquidators, for like no readily apparent reason, for reasons that were just ill-defined, there's a huge mound. I mean, a pile, just a massive cache of... Still in the package, absolutely pristine, pristine, talking Dennis Miller dolls. And you press, I swear to God, I'm not making this up. You press the button on the back, and the talking Dennis Miller doll, which is made inexplicably by talkingpresidents.com, and it says things such as, Don, you want to,
Guess what, folks? That's the news, and I am out of here.
So there you go. That's that's the way that works. All right. Let's, without further ado, welcome to the Rick Emerson radio program from Willamette Week, Ms. Kelly Clark joining us now. Kelly Clark, how are you on this fine, what we're claiming is a Wednesday afternoon?
I'm doing great. How about you two?
I'm fine. Dawn, I can't prove conclusively that she's high or that she has defiled the temple of Jesus that is her body by ingesting some sort of intoxicant, but she does seem to be exhibiting the same mannerisms. Dawn?
I could just be goofy with tiredness.
She's goofy with giddiness over the chance to broadcast yet another fine program to the people of Portland.
Or it could be the homemade Kahlua that Greg and Sarah had in that bag over there that I realize now.
Oh, dear.
I don't,
there's homemade Kahlua?
I don't know what that's made from, actually.
Did you have some of the homemade Kahlua?
I did. I put some in my coffee a little earlier.
When you say a little earlier.
It's coffee and some sort of booze, so that's like my two favorite things in one bottle, so enjoy.
When
that's a very fabulous Wednesday, Tuesday, I tell you right there.
When did you ingest this Kahlua, Don?
At the beginning of Legion of News.
So about an hour ago.
Yeah.
Okay, just checking. I mean, I'm not passing judgment. Rick Emerson's not
like
approved.
It's like a time release capsule kind of thing.
Exactly.
Going on,
yeah.
Right?
It's. I'm not judgmental. It's. I'm all for living while one is alive and sleeping when one is dead. Don Taylor.
Thank you.
Well, Kelly. First of all, I want to say thank you because I know it's. As we've said, this is actually right now a pre-taped show. We're taping this on Tuesday, to play back on Wednesday because I'm not going to be around. I'm going to be doing this leverage thing. So I know it's late in the day for you, so thank you for making some time for us.
I love it. Yeah, I heard you've got a star turn coming up. Is that what's going on?
I've got I'm sorry?
A star turn.
I hear you've got like a star turn tomorrow.
Sure. You know, if by star turn you mean I've got it's one line, and don't get me wrong, I'm going to sell that one line. I'm going to deliver that one line as a line has never before been delivered, but it's a modest part. We'll say that. I'm going to make the best of it, but it's yes.
Can you tease the one line for us, or is that against contract?
Well, let me see. Actually, and the only normally I would. In fact, we've had this sort of ongoing bit here where because I've auditioned for leverage.
I think one, two, three. I mean, if you're counting each part as a separate audition, I think I've auditioned for Leverage, I think, like seven times. And and it's just inexplicable because they keep asking me to audition, and it's just like I keep failing. And the other thing is, Cheryl has this theory, which is not like entirely out of the realm of possibility. Cheryl's theory is that they are, in fact, just bringing me back so that they can compile some sort of a reel, which will then be shown at the Leverage holiday party, of of me failing and doing ever more ridiculous accents. Because the first time I auditioned, it was a West Virginia coal miner accent. The second, third, and fourth times were British. The fourth, fifth, and sixth times I auditioned for Leverage, and it just makes me sound like an abject failure. The fourth, fifth, and sixth times, I think it was a variation on a sort of the Saint-Tropez kind of an accent, which they sort of masked by saying the European accent of your choice. And so I just started doing – I was just doing Ricardo Montalban as Khan. And amazingly enough, that didn't pay the dividend of being hired. So they finally just cast me, I swear to God, as an American television newscaster. That's it. So it's a big stretch for me.
A television newscaster, my. So you get to, like, put on a suit and everything and some pancake makeup.
I'm fairly certain they actually want me to bring my own clothes, too. So I think I may have been a low entry way for them to solve this casting problem. And he's got a tie.
Do you kill anybody, or do you wrong anybody in some substantial way? This is Leverage.
See, I was hoping. It was just I was hoping against hope that I would be gunned down somehow, or maybe play a pivotal role. And in the past, what we have done, and Dawn has sort of helped me out with this, is that I have come in after my audition, and we have recreated the audition right here on the show so people can hear exactly how abysmal, like, my West Virginia coal miner accent is. This, though, they actually have told everybody not to say anything because it's the season finale. So I think I am constrained from mentioning any of the details, but I will say that I am a television news caster, you know, the guy behind the desk, and I reveal... I reveal the eventual fate of one of the main characters. Not one of the main characters from the show, but one of the main characters from this episode.
How exciting. You know, the other reason I'm excited about this is because, you know, you have achieved, or at least you will achieve tomorrow, something that my father wants to achieve. My father has had half a line on Leverage.
And so, but your dad, Sharon was telling me that your dad's been on Leverage like a bunch of times.
My dad has been, well, parts of his body have been on Leverage. Let's put it that way, which sounds dirty, but he's been an extra for Leverage, I think, three or four times. His car, which is a vintage MGA, has been on Leverage. And then in one of the most recent episodes, he played a record producer, and he had a quasi intelligible line, which you could hear half of, which was basically, "Here, take my car." Blah, 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 blah. So he's, trust me, I am on the up and up when it comes to the nooks and crannies of the backs of Leverage sets, because my father's bald head is on them sometimes.
Is your dad an actor by trade, or by, is it something he's pursued in his career, or did he just decide, like, well, that'll be fun?
No, he's actually a retired Air Force dude. He was a safety officer for the Portland Air Base for 30 years, and so he just retired. And he just decided he wanted to go be an extra. He thought it'd be fun. And then he had never seen the show Extra, so I had to introduce him to the actual show Extra, and he says it's exactly the same, except everyone's nicer. So this is like just his goal. Like he was just like, yeah, I thought it'd be fun to do. You know, I'm retired now. So he hangs out on the set of Leverage, and makes himself, you know, ingratiates himself, and someday we'll have a full line.
And I understand that the craft services
it's
table.
It's gonna happen.
I think the craft services at Leverage is awesome. That's what I've been told.
I heard that was one of the good things. So he says that they're a fabulous crew, and so there you go. You see a bald dude who kind of looks like old Bruce Willis. That's my dad.
Awesome. My wife actually made the observation. She said that, and again, I'm fully aware that I may film this part and then they cut it. You know, it may end up on the cutting room floor or whatever. They may not use it. That happens a lot of times. But she, Laura actually said, she said, well, you know, I'm glad that you actually got something on Leverage, because she said, this is the support. I love my wife and all, but this is the sometimes odd tone that support takes in my household. She said it was actually starting to be a little embarrassing because, like, you were the only one we knew that hadn't been cast yet. So apparently, in her head, She was like counting in her head how many of people in our circle of acquaintances had been cast, and then constantly just looking at me across the living room with a thinly disguised scorn and loathing. So, you know, I've forestalled divorce, I guess, by another year or so.
Wow.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's true. Everybody's been on leverage. Our front desk administration guy.
Actually,
Everybody but you, frankly.
I think Nibbler's been on leverage. I think Greg was on leverage when they filmed at Barracuda. It was supposed to be for Nashville or whatever, but they filmed something there. Our friend Todd Tolson.
Oh, wait, that was the one my dad was at. It was at Dixie Tavern.
Yeah, your dad and Greg were on the same episode.
Yeah. You know what? The star power must have been, blinding. I don't know how anybody actually managed to watch the main actors.
Acting is just so weird because, you know, we came in today, Dawn and I were here prepping for the show this morning, and Greg was wearing, there's no other way to put it, he was wearing lady pants. He was wearing women's jeans this morning because he was auditioning. I don't want to give too much away. I think he said this on Fun Employment, but he was auditioning for the part of a disgruntled man. We'll call it that. And Sarah was
wearing...
I'm sorry?
Never mind.
He was the part of a disgruntled man, and for most auditions, you just show up and you read the line and whatever. But I guess for this, they actually said they wanted you to come and sort of approximate the costume as you saw it, as you imagined it. And he asked Sarah to help him out, and for some reason, this took the form of Sarah jamming him into, like, jeans, you know, for, like, the guy from Great White or something. It was just all very weird. I have no idea why.
I don't think disgruntled men wear women's jeans. I think usually confident men rock women's jeans.
Yeah, I
think
know.
That, you know what, if he doesn't get that part, it's Sarah's fault.
I that's what I would do. That's what I'd say. Anyways, there's a whole lot of stuff going on, and you got to skedaddle here in short order. What is coming up in the glorious world of Willamette Week?
A ton of stuff this week. You know, first, I mentioned this a little bit last time I was on. Our Best of Portland variety show is this Thursday. We still have tickets available for that. It's $7, and it's a bunch of the best and coolest people that we featured in last week's Best of Portland issue, from stormtroopers to lady contortionists and stripping hipster punk rockers that are going to all be at the Wonder Ballroom on Thursday. So that's going on. Another huge thing that's going on this week is the PDX Pop Festival. It is a free all-ages, all-local music festival that takes place in Eastside Industrial. If you haven't been, you have to check it out. And if you want to see kind of what you should see, tomorrow, check out Willamette Week. We kind of have a yearbook of the best acts, everything from, you know, the hardest rockers to the best hair, you know, something a little bit for everybody. So we've got that going on, and then a big review of Lucky Strike.
Awesome.
Which, have you tried their delicious Szechuan cuisine?
No, I haven't. But was it you that was actually talking about this the last time? Maybe it was the last time you were here. Somebody was just talking about that. Maybe Dawn, you, anything? No, I got nothing.
Really?
Fail. So, but somebody had just mentioned that. So there's
someone else eats in Portland besides me.
I know that you are you are really the premier opinion on all things culinary, though. You're the first word, the last word,
and
all the letters in between. So,
you know, anyway, you're making me blush.
Nah,
there you go. But Lucky Strike is an amazing Szechuan restaurant, amazing Chinese cuisine that used to be out in the boonies on 123rd and like Division. It was a tiny little hole in the wall, and they rented a much bigger space at 39th and Hawthorne, right next to the Hawthorne Theater. So it's central, and if you have ever wanted to eat chili-laced pig ears, if you've wanted to have a hot pepper chicken bath, and other things that will absolutely melt your face with heat, oh, my God, this place is just absolutely amazing.
So
you've got to try it.
That must be why. I know, because there's some sign or something out front, or as we're legally required to say, signage out front, I think, that actually says maybe the name of the place. Maybe that's why I know it, because I drive by the Hawthorne Theater on my way home. Yeah. All right.
That place is magical. You got to try it. It has some of the best Chinese food in town, and really unique things that a lot of places doesn't have. Then again, if you don't like the heat, man, this place is not for you. It will hurt you for days, but it is so worth it. It's got some great food. And then also we wrote about boozy ice cream, which there is a bar in town that is mixing all sorts of different booze with all sorts of different ice cream flavors and making just creamy, cold, delicious fabulousness.
Not being a guy who drinks, I don't even really know if that's something that I would really want. Dawn?
I like boozy ice cream.
All right, there you go. Dawn gives it the thumbs up.
Yeah, well, how about, like, bourbon chocolate Grand Marnier ice cream?
Oh, that sounds good.
Or apple pie ice cream, which is baked apples that are mixed with cinnamon nutmeg ice cream with Clear Creek pear brandy.
This works for me.
All right. Well, see.
There's one more that's really awesome. He's making a new flavor. This is at Pope House Bourbon Lounge on 21st and Gleason, that bourbon bar. And the dude, the chef there, is making something called Sarah Connor on Fire. He's making it right now. He hasn't made it yet. It's habanero vanilla ice cream.
Awesome. Hey,
named after Terminator.
I have off the restaurant you're talking about now. I have a question for you. What has become of, because it's no longer where it was, what has become of the restaurant Lovely Hula Hands?
Sorry, there was some sort of distortion. I couldn't hear you.
That was actually
what restaurant?
I'm an idiot. What I was actually doing is I was actually tapping the table with my ballpoint pen while I tried to speak to you, and the phone is of course on the table. I'm an idiot.
So it was like Morse code and talking at the same time.
Yeah, it was kind of a
fun restaurant.
It's Lovely Hula Hands, which was
Lovely Hula Hands closed, but the people behind Lovely Hula Hands, the Minnick sisters, opened Lovely's 50-50, which is a just sort of a more moderately priced, more family-friendly version of Lovely Hula Hands that focuses on pizza and ice cream. And it's right down the street from the old Lovely Hula Hands. If you're on North Mississippi and you're at the old Lovely Hula Hands building, if you walk, I think, a block and a half north, you'll hit Lovely's 50-50. Yeah. And it's great. It's got, you know, some of the things that they used to have on the appetizer menu at the old restaurant, they now have at the new restaurant. They make wood-fired pizzas that are really great, and their ice cream is super good. I don't know if it's boozy ice cream good, but it's still really good, and you can feed it to kids.
All right, well, I'll...
If you are interested in such things.
I'll give it a go then. All right, excellent. Kelly Clark from Willamette, thank you so much for spending some time with us today. All right, there you go, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, my pleasure. All have fun, you guys, and good luck tomorrow.
Thank you. I'll look for your dad's bald head.
Yes.
All right.
Well,
awesome.
You should.
There you go. There's Kelly Clark, ladies and gentlemen, from Willamette Week. Excellent. Fantastic. All right. There you go. Have you been? Did you go to Lovely Hula Hands when it was open?
No, I never did. And I'd heard many good things there.
So great. It was one of those places that I'm rhapsodizing about a thing you can't even have anymore. But it was really, really, really good food that was actually so spicy and flavorful that you couldn't really go there very often. I mean, not even in the sense that it was peppery or hot or anything. It was, you realize how, it was one of those places where you realize how desensitized your taste buds get in America sometimes. Why they have to jam so much like corn syrup into things, for example, because, you know, because your taste buds are simultaneously overloaded and yet also sort of numbed, I think, with a lot of American cuisine, even like restaurant stuff. And it was small portions of really, really flavorful, like spiced beef and sort of salad-y things. It was just really fantastic. And now it's gone. Plus, the single best thing about Lovely Hula Hands was that it was this big pink building, but you went inside and it was always very dimly lit. It was actually even dimmer than our studio, which is saying something, because we keep the lights pretty low in here. But all of the lighting was pink and orange, which sounds like it would be awful, and it was. The thing is, you looked fabulous. Seriously, it didn't matter. I mean, you could have been laying out in the parking lot being pecked at by seagulls for the better part of a week. You walk in there, you looked awesome. It was really wonderful. You get there, you just learn. I'd be like, we never want to leave because you just look exceptional. And then also there was food, but now it's gone, and I am poorer for it. Here's what's coming up. We have the top five later on today. Don Taylor's top five concert experiences. We'll do a little bit of post Mad Men recap. We've got that on the way. I was supposed to call Greg earlier today to talk about his audition and to get his leverage experience. So we'll do that here in just a bit. I do want to take a moment, and I'm kind of an ass because I'm late with this. I was supposed to do it like nine shows ago. But there was a message on my Facebook. And it was from Zoe, who I'm assuming, well, I guess it is the daughter here. So a woman named Zoe posted a message, and she said, "Hey, Rick, can you do me a favor, please? My dad loves your show, and so do I. My dad's birthday was on Friday, July 23rd. Can you please say happy late birthday to Lee?" And I'm going to mangle the last name here, but it's B-E-G-H-T-O-L, like Bechtel or Betel?
I don't know.
Bechtel?
Bechtel.
Huh?
Yeah, that's it.
It's probably not that. I was a guess right there.
It's a T Bruce, so you just pronounce it.
Anyway, she says, "Happy birthday, Lee Beck." please and thank you from his daughter Zoe. So there you go. So you know, in my defense, you know, it was a happy late birthday to begin with. In her defense, she told me about it on Monday, and I said I would do it, and here it is Wednesday.
And she should have told you how to pronounce the name.
Yeah, in your face, Zoe. Anyway, so happy birthday to Lee, and so forth. And now it's done. All right, at the news desk, she's Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
More than 1,000 bottles of wine spilled onto the highway near McMinnville Tuesday when two commercial trucks collided. The crash took place at about 1:40 p.m. at the intersection of Highway 99W at Highway 18. According to police, the truck transporting wine was northbound on Highway 18, attempting to negotiate a turn northbound onto Highway 99 when it collided with a southbound commercial truck and overturned. The rear of the trailer split open, spilling hundreds of boxes containing wine bottles.
Now, this isn't two trucks carrying wine that collided, right? It was just one truck carrying wine.
One truck with lots of wine.
All right. What is the other? Did the other truck have anything interesting in it, like cheese or?
I don't think so. It doesn't say. It just said a commercial truck.
All right. Because I wondered if it was like we had this story. I don't know, maybe a couple years ago. It was unbelievable. It was like a truck full of bees. You know, like it was, you know, carrying hundreds and hundreds of beehives to like an orchard or a vineyard or something. And it collided with a truck that had something like, it was like orange juice or apple juice or something. And it just, I'm so glad that there was no video footage because it could not possibly have been as great as the panoramic vision that I saw in my mind's eye. The sort of rumble-rama, the glorious Technicolor surround sound imagery of just 5 billion bees pouring out and then like a jillion things of, you know, orange juice just onto the highway. And I mean, just oh to have been a witness to that. Because both of these things then remind me of the 1970s film The Great American Traffic Jam, starring Howard Hessman as DJ Senor Smooth, in which a truck trailer holding carrying a bunch of orange juice bottles, again with the orange juice, collides with another truck that is hauling vodka.
Mm.
And so by the end of the movie, of course, everybody's drunk and wah-wah. But it is about the largest traffic jam in L.A. history. And then there's a birth, and there's a death, and then like some guy makes up with his daughter who ran away from home, and they're both stuck in the traffic jam.
Does someone learn a lesson?
There are many lessons learned, although to this soundtrack of Southern California in about 1977, and again, the DJ, who I suspect was based on KMET jocks at that time, was played by Howard Hessman before he was ever on WKRP, and his DJ name was Senor Smooth.
Hmm.
The Great American Traffic Jam, ladies and gentlemen. Here's Dawn Taylor.
Anyway, with the wine bottle dump, ODOT workers removed two dump truck loads full of broken and damaged wine bottles and anticipated possibly two more loads would be taken away before the vehicles were cleared and the highway reopened. Details about the wine manufacturer and the type of wine were not immediately available.
Okay, then.
Two objects were seen floating away as Russian cosmonauts performed a spacewalk outside the International Space Station on Tuesday. NASA spokesman Rob Navias said flight controllers believe they know what one of the objects was.
The first of the objects that was seen floating away during the earlier portion of the spacewalk may have been a clamp that is used to attach and collect some of the cabling that the Russian cosmonauts are hooking up.
I don't think I want anything floating away while I'm on the space station. I'd like to keep everything. Even stuff I might not have a need for, I'd like to keep.
Yeah, things should not be just falling off.
No, a clamp seems important. And here's the other thing about that is it seems like there's precedent that when things fall off a spacecraft, then the rest of the trip goes poorly. There are other issues at play there. I'm just saying, it seems to me.
Usually when things fall off of space, other space things, eventually something blows up.
Eventually, yes. Wackiness does not ensue. There's sort of an immolation that ensues, but less wackiness. All right.
Navius says that neither thing that came falling off of the space station should be any threat.
Threats. Let's see. Do I have... it's right here.
The early analysis indicates that they have floated out of harm's way and would not have any potential for recontacting the station.
Okay, well, so there you go. This isn't the same place where they couldn't deliver food a couple weeks ago, is it?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, I know they're Russians,
but it's a very complicated thing. I mean, it's not like just, you know, sending a pizza, you know, down the block. I mean, it's a very complicated issue.
I suppose. I'm just, look, I'm just saying, it seems like if you were a cosmonaut, a Russian navigator of the outermost regions of, you know, of man's knowledge and, you know, whatever, orbiting around the Earth. That's a thing that would fill you with apprehension anyway. First of all, because you're, you know, in goddamn space. Second of all, because you're in something, you know, built by a Russian contractor who you got to assume was just like loaded half the time anyway. And, you know, and probably got the job because his cousin killed somebody. You know, and also there's that whole thing. You remember during the fall of the Berlin Wall, there was that whole jazz where there was some cosmonaut and it's like they shot him into space. And then, like, an hour later, there was the revolution, and Gorbachev quit, and they tore down the wall, and nobody knew what was going on. And, you know, meanwhile, he's floating around going, hello, I'm in space. Ah, crap. And they just sort of forgot that he was there. And then they had to be some international coalition had to get together and go take him, like, you know, take him like some goldfish crackers or something. Because there was just, like, nobody, like, he kept calling down to mission control, like, hello, hello, is anyone there? I'd really like some lunch. And then there was no one to go rescue him. So I mean, it's a bit of an iffy proposition is what I'm saying.
It's kind of amazing that the space stuff works at all anyway without people just, you know, exploding and suffocating.
Oh, they explode and suffocate all the time. I have this theory. I don't think it's a conspiracy so much as it is the perfectly logical tendency of people and organizations to try to withhold bad information as long as they can. So I always figure that any exploding or people floating away sort of you only live twice style that we just find out about that a couple years after the fact. It's sort of like how on the radio you're on a 40-second delay, so if somebody says the F word, you can bleep it, you know, or you got the, you know. I figure that we're on like a year and a half delay with the government. They send the guy into space, he does the thing, he comes back home, then they decide how they're gonna release the story. Because otherwise you risk. I mean, like you think
about it. Gives them time to swap him out for a guy who looks exactly like him so no one knows.
Exactly. Well, look. We should just start spreading the. Here's a rumor we should just create. We should just spread the rumor that NASA recruits twins. So that if something goes horrifically wrong with one guy and he's boiled alive or something, they can roll his brother out. You know. Well, Danny. Danny. What happened to Danny? Well, he was sent upon by squid-like creatures from Alpha Centauri. Well, damn. Where's Donnie? Well, Donnie's right here. And then you bring Donnie out, and he says, "Hello, my, you know, it's a, you know, I'm so glad to have made a triumphant trip to wherever and back. Here I am." So that's the thing. If you said it enough times and in the right number of Jeff Rentz chat rooms, you would find that had taken on a certain amount of currency in the cultural belief system.
But then, of course, if it actually turned out to be true, they might have you killed.
That's true. I would imagine that if you were to create. Right now, if by the end of the show we created three plausible but to our knowledge false urban myths, you're going to find that like one of them is true.
Yeah.
Here's the thing about that.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Is this? Would you rather we moved on?
No. I'm fascinated.
No. When you say you're fascinated, now see, now I don't believe you. Now I think
am.
That you're
playing
along. No,
I'm interested.
I
want to hear what pops out of your head next.
Well, it was going to be about snuff films. Do you still want to hear it?
Sure.
Okay. Well, here's my
you
thing
bet.
About. Here's why it sounds like a no lose. I was thinking about snuff films the other day because that's one of the things I do, and not professionally. You understand. But, you know, for the longest time, snuff films have just been held to be a complete urban myth. They've been held to be an urban legend. You look it up on Snopes or on whatever that news group that existed that predated Snopes or Cecil Adams or whatever. And they always say, well, you know, there's no evidence that snuff films exist. I mean, in other words, there's obviously footage of people, you know, being killed somehow or meeting their demise. But a snuff film in the sense of like, I give you 15 grand in an envelope, you give me a videotape of a guy just being nail gunned somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, they always say that doesn't really exist. The idea of a death that is arranged and conducted and filmed solely for the purposes of being sold, that doesn't exist. But I was thinking about this. Given the sheer amount of money that exists in the world and the number of lunatics that walk around on this planet, and now, given the fact that it's like you get like a 5-megapixel camera with your breakfast cereal, basically, how is it that it doesn't exist? I mean, it almost has to. I mean, it has to exist by now.
Well, I subscribe to the belief, and I'm not the first person to say this, but I do subscribe to the whole idea that if you can think of it, someone somewhere has tried it.
Right. I mean,
no matter how insane it is, if it pops into your head, somebody somewhere has attempted to do it.
It seems entirely implausible that with the number of crazy people and cameras floating around this world, some guy has not, has done that. And that, so that's one of those things that was an urban legend, but probably now because of the proliferation of technology is now actually true. And it's just that it's never been officially acknowledged or stated by the authorities. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I would imagine that is the sort of thing that the authorities would want to not lend credence to.
Probably, because they don't want to create like a larger market than already exists for it. All right. Well, fair enough. Okay, so there you go. That's one of the things I think about.
How about we do a clown watch?
Speaking of that, let's see. Here's your clown watch for Wednesday on the Rick Emerson Radio program. Here's Don Taylor.
Authorities say a Pittsburgh-area man robbed a bank wearing a woman's blonde wig, fake breasts under a sweater, and clown pants. Swissvale police say 48-year-old Dennis Hawkins of North Braddock, Pennsylvania, was sitting in a parked car covered in red dye from an exploding packet in a bag of money when he was arrested Saturday. Police Chief Greg Geppert said Hawkins robbed the bank at gunpoint using a toy BB gun he had shoplifted from a store. Hawkins then entered a woman's car. She got out, took her keys, and alerted police. Hawkins was found sitting in the car with the exploded pack of money. He's being held on $230,000 bail. It's not clear whether he has an attorney. I'm not sure if he really counts as a clown, but he was wearing fake breasts, a woman's wig, and clown pants.
I don't think that's a traditional clown. I think he may be an unorthodox clown. Maybe he's some sort of a he's got his own personal variation on a theme. I would say that he certainly. He meets the creepiness factor.
Yeah.
But beyond that, I'm just looking through here.
Why just clown pants?
I don't know. And what are clown pants exactly? Is that like hammer pants?
Well, I would imagine, if you had an entire clown outfit, which would be, a brightly colored, possibly sateen outfit, with the top part would have those big pom-pom buttons on it, probably. But, then usually you have the big, giant, baggy pants. Sometimes they have the sort of a hula hoop thing in it to make you rounder, and they have to wear them with suspenders.
I'm just looking through my email right now, and the number of people who want a copy of the Clown Watch specifically for the purposes of frightening someone they know. This, I swear to God, I'm just reading this as it is. Rick, I am prepared to offer you much money as well as 1 hour with my sister in exchange for the Clown Watch music. Please see attached photo of sister. Rick.
Doesn't he know he can just, record it right off the podcast?
No, it's... You would think, especially because he's listening, to this version of the show. But
we should sell them.
Rick, would you please send me the Clown Watch sounder? This would be great to scare my wife with. Thank you, says a completely different guy. How about this one? Hey, where did you get that Clown Watch music? I want to make it the ringtone on my phone. Specifically for, again, my wife, who is terrified of clowns, says Peter. So,
Peter, don't do that.
There's a whole lot of weird people in this world.
Peter, that's wrong.
Peter, I wholeheartedly endorse this idea, but it's a thing that really, it seems like you could have done that, again, just daunted by taping it. So maybe I'll have to get downloadable or something at some point. Speaking of clowns, do we have the pop culture authority clown-wise maybe coming up at some point?
We do indeed. Today's pop culture authority, if we do indeed get a chance to get to it today, is answering the question, what are phantom clowns?
So we'll either do that today or tomorrow, tomorrow being Thursday, if you're listening to this on the playback. Yeah, you all know what I'm talking about. All right, let's do one more, and then we will take a break, and we'll come back on the other side. This is Don Taylor at the News Desk.
An angry pregnant cow that got loose at the California State Fair on Tuesday was fatally shot by Cal Expo police. The bovine broke free at about 9:30 a.m. from a livestock area where it was being displayed in a birthing area. The animal stampeded through the midway along with many other areas of the fair. And I have a little sound here.
Okay.
This would be State Fair General Manager Brian May. Somewhere.
This was just at the time where we had a couple thousand exhibitors and concessionaires coming to work, and just prior to the gates opening. The veterinarians tried tranquilizing the cow. The tranquilizer gun did not fire. The cow was breaking free again from the barriers that were being used to sequester it. It knocked over a police officer on a bike. It was going to get onto the fairgrounds, and at which time it became a public safety matter, and our police shot and killed the cow, and the calf did not survive.
So this is a cow, you're saying, that did this?
A pregnant cow.
A pregnant cow.
It was being led to a birthing area. There, apparently at the California State Fair, they have an actual area where you can go and watch animals give birth.
That doesn't seem
which
like
is
a,
kind of disgusting.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like a thing I want to watch. I think I could probably go without watching that.
Yeah, it broke free and it just went crazy and ran angry through the state fair. The police corralled the animal, tried to get it into a trailer, but the cow freed itself again and dashed towards one of the stages. Veterinarians tried to tranquilize the cow. Gun didn't fire. Yeah, and finally they just shot it.
And so did you say that the cow was sort of, that it was running, though? I mean, it was sort of...
Yes.
It was going at a high rate of speed, because you don't really think...
It knocked over a policeman on a bicycle.
Yeah, but I mean, but that doesn't have anything to do with velocity. I'm just curious because...
It probably wasn't running that fast. First of all, it was pregnant. But, you know, it's big, so...
See, that's my other thing, is that you don't... this is one of those things that that I think about, and, you know, just because I've got a tiny brain, and so just the most unimportant, absurd things will amuse and or fascinate me. I sometimes think about cows and why you never see them running.
Well, they don't have to. I mean, where are they going to go?
Okay.
And have you never seen a Western movie with cattle stampeding?
Well, see, but that's male. I always assumed that was just male cows,
no, that's
or,
cows
or steer.
Too.
That were not cows. Those were steer. There was a difference there. You know, it's like the whole question of whether or not there are wild cows. This is one of those things. I find a lot of things about cows to be really, I would say, disproportionately interesting. This is really one of those moments, and very rarely is this the case. This is one of those moments where I wish that there was a webcam so that everybody could see. Just, it wasn't even like you were feigning interest. You just sort of nodded like, okay, we should be done now. And sure enough, we will be. All right. We're going to do this. We're going to come back on the other side. We'll continue a little bit of Mad Men talk. We've got top five coming up. Geek Watch, Taser Watch. It's all on the way. You stay there. That's I'm not even going to bother to close the clown thing out. It's just, we've gone so far from the clown watch there. There you go. The Rick Emerson Show continues next. You are listening to the Emerson News Network. You stay there. We're back after this.
And
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Thank you for joining us. A day worth living is a day with a little Gigi Allen in it. There you go. It's 503-505-6964. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com or dawn@rickemerson.com. Any text box open as well. I had something I was going to say that seemed really important, but instead of getting to that, I'm just going to say that we're... Sorry, I'm just getting nothing but clown messages now. Hold on a second. Fantastic. Before we plunge on ahead into the news, I have to say this is really just a Dawn thing. So I was on your Facebook page, and I was getting at that thing where, you know, like, you've been tagged in a post about whatever.
Yeah.
And sometimes I don't. You and I have talked about Facebook and whether or not, you know, I just spend a lot of time you're looking at other people's Facebook pages, and I don't, only because then that becomes a full time job in and of itself. But I noticed that I was getting tagged a lot, and I couldn't figure out why. And it's because you had posted that thing yesterday about we were going to be pre-taping, and then it got postponed or whatever. But the point is that I'm on your Facebook page yesterday, and you have one of those little like widgets or applications or programs or whatever it is on your Facebook page that tracks what you're reading, and so then it tells visitors, like, if you have overlapping literary interests.
Uh-huh.
If I were to ask you,
I always forget to update that, too, so it's not current at all.
I was going to ask about that. Can you now name for me, from memory, any of the books that Facebook claims you are currently reading?
I can't remember how long ago it was I updated it. So
I'll say this.
Know.
I'll say that the first one is Twilight. Immediately after Twilight is... let's see, I've got Twilight, two Harry Potter books. This is what it claims you are reading.
It's lying to you. I don't...
That's what I thought.
It's just making crap up.
I took a screen capture of it. I was so amused by it. Unless I was at a different Dawn Taylor's page, who also I believe has your same photograph. But it's the We Read widget or whatever.
Yeah.
Here's what it says you're reading. It says you're reading Twilight, two Harry Potter books, The Da Vinci Code, Angels and Demons, which I believe is the follow-up to The Da Vinci Code. And then Pride and Prejudice, the no zombie version. So there you go.
What the hell?
And then I said to myself, who is Dawn Taylor? And when did I think that we had overlapping literary interests of any variety at all?
It's just making things up.
All right, that's your story. Hello, hi, you're on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
Hello there, Rick Emerson. This is Greg Nibbler.
Oh, hey, Greg Nibbler. How are you? Thank you for calling. I know you've had a busy day. You guys were here doing Fun Employment this morning. When I got here, which is at like maybe 11, you guys had already been here doing the show for a while, and then you had to immediately skedaddle because you had auditions to go to while wearing lady pants. So you've had a full day already.
Yes, I did. The lady pants was quite a stressful occasion, but I got through it.
To whatever extent you can talk about this, because you know it's the whole business of you don't want to give away what the movie is about, and there's also actorly superstition and whatever, but to whatever extent you can you explain why you came to be wearing that outfit this morning as you were getting ready to go audition?
Well, the one of the roles that I was auditioning for required me to be dressed as a hipster, which I am not. And nor do I quite know exactly how to dress like that. So on the show today, Sarah brought in an outfit for me, which apparently, and I wasn't aware of this, I guess hipsters wear lady pants.
Is that true?
Is what they
Dawn?
Wear.
Dawn, do you have any knowledge of that?
I know nothing about that, but then I don't think I know any actual hipsters.
Is that because it's like, well, the skinny jeans thing, and so is that how they get that look with the ultra skinny jeans? Is there actually just jeans made for the fairer sex?
I guess so. Apparently, that's what it is. I always wondered that, too, how they got the jeans that skinny. But, yeah, I guess they're pretty much all wearing women's jeans.
Okay, then. And so how did the audition go, if I can ask?
I think it went pretty good. Yeah, so I went from that one to another one where I played a disgruntled war vet.
Okay, see, I was... Okay, now it's also clear, because that's the one I knew about, and I was conflating the whole... He was playing a disgruntled war vet with you had a woman's pants on, and I couldn't quite figure out if the pants were causing you to be disgruntled or exactly how it is that came together. All right, it's all so clear. So we are actually, right now, we're taping the show on a Tuesday evening because it's going to be played back Wednesday because I got this thing I'm going to be doing for Leverage, this is one or two lines or whatever. And so I'm kind of canvassing the folks I know who have had any sort of a
any sort of a role on that show, whether it's just an extra or a stand-in or a speaking part or whatever. And you you did a little thing on Leverage. It was either Barracuda or the Dixie or something. It was a couple months ago, but you were on that show, right?
Yes, I was. It was the country music episode with John Schneider.
And so what? I'm not even really quite sure how to where to dive in with this, but you're on the show. They give you the call. They say, okay, here's where you got to be. You got to be there at a certain time. And you know, I've never really done any actual acting in anything that wasn't one of my own sort of lame vanity productions. So they tell you that thing of like expect a 12-hour day, or that, you know, to block out 12 hours. Is it as you always hear, where it's just a lot of sort of sitting around, punctuated by moments of terror, where you have to remember what to do?
That's pretty much exactly it. I was on there for 2 days, and I think both days were about 14 hours that I was there, with the majority, I would say 13 hours and 30 minutes of that was sitting doing nothing.
You're just sort of staring blankly at a wall and just wondering, I wonder how often I can wander to the craft services table before they tell me to stop it.
That's pretty much about it, just sitting there drinking coffee, getting jittery, and then, that's pretty much what the whole day is. Although I can say there's always a lot of interesting people that they get to be on the show. Especially when I was on there, because it was a pretty big scene. And some of the extras, I have no idea where they found them, but it was entertaining just watching them.
Did you actually see John Schneider at any point? Was he on the premises?
Yeah. I stood next to him a couple of times and said hello, to the extent I didn't want to sit there and bombard him with Dukes of Hazzard questions. But he was there pretty much the whole day. He was even sitting in the corner playing guitar.
Really? So that's a thing in your life that you probably didn't anticipate, that you would be sitting near John Schneider as he just strummed a guitar to himself. That's one thing that you don't anticipate happening in your life.
Well, and the thing was, it was him sitting there playing guitar, and then the director was Jonathan Francone, I think I'm saying his name right, number one, Will Riker, from Star Trek The Next Generation.
No, Don's a huge fan of his. That's Jonathan Frakes. Don is his biggest fan. Yeah, Jonathan Frakes.
Frakes. Yeah, and so it was the two of them standing next to each other having a conversation. It was just flashbacks to my childhood. It was so weird.
It's completely bizarre. When you're on a show like Leverage, and I'm sure that every show has something like this, but do they give you some sort of, is there a guy with a bullhorn that basically says, like, look, don't talk to, don't screw with anybody, don't bother the stars, don't whatever? I mean, do they give you some sort of blanket instruction about not you know, kind of being a pest? I mean, not you specifically, but just in general?
Well, they didn't really do that. It was more just implied, don't hassle anybody, essentially, don't talk to them. There wasn't any instructions, you know, not to look anybody in the eyes or something like that, but it was pretty much implied, don't bother them.
And then, so once you have done your part, and so what is it on that episode of Leverage, what did your part entail? Because you said that you were standing next to John Schneider. So were you an extra, or were you an extra who did something? You know, you had some specific action. What was your role?
I was pretty much just an extra. I mean, they have you do specific things during the shoot, you know, different, you know, stand here with a drink or bump into this person or, you know, just kind of walk around and be the background person. So it wasn't too intensive acting work, really. But they do give you instructions on what to do.
And then once you're done, if you're just sitting around for the whole thing, do they just have some big announcement about like, and you and you stay, everybody else done? Or is it just, are you just kind of there until they, you know, the guy with the bullhorn says, and then we're done for the day?
That's pretty much it, because I guess, you know, they never know if they're going to have to reshoot something.
Right.
So, I mean, and I don't know if your role will be like that, since you have something specific that you're doing. But at least for mine, I mean, I would do it. I mean, I think the second day, the last 5 hours, I didn't do anything. I just sat there. And then they said, okay, now you can leave. So it is pretty much how you describe it. A whole lot of sitting and then intense for about 10 minutes and then nothing.
All I know is I talked to the one woman who's the wardrobe coordinator or whatever at that Leverage today. She at one point during the phone conversation, she just said, now we may have to shave you, so if you're okay with that. And she didn't really expand on it beyond the phrase, we may have to shave you. And it's like, but what are you going to do? You just go, sure, why not? So that may be waiting for me in the future.
Well, I'm not sure what kind of role you're doing there that would require the shaving.
I don't know. It might be. It's entirely possible that maybe it's an off-camera role. Maybe somebody fancies me. Who knows? All right. Okay. So funemploymentradio.com is the website for Fun Employment Radio, and I will let everybody know kind of how that goes. All right, Greg Nibbler, thank you, my friend.
All right, thank you.
All right, it's Greg Nibbler from Fun Employment Radio. Hello, Don Taylor.
Hey, so this We Read Books thing on Facebook, what it is it's a thing called Bookshelf, and I don't have any books on – I have not put any books on my bookshelf. So it says, none, check out the popular books. So that's why it has Twilight, Harry Potter, Da Vinci Code, Pride and Prejudice.
Okay.
Those are popular books that other people have read, because I myself have not created a bookshelf.
I was going to say I wasn't judging, but I was completely judging. So, all right. Well, I'm glad we were able to clarify that. I'm not going to say I thought less of you, but I did. It gave me pause, as they say, when Don Taylor is reading. The first thing I saw was Twilight, and I thought, okay, well, it was a phenomenon, and maybe you read the first book and you don't realize like this is crap. And then I saw the Harry Potter thing, and I thought, well, okay, fair enough, Harry Potter. But then it was like the one-two shot of Da Vinci Code and Angels and Demons, and I just thought, like, what? Who is this?
No, actually, if you're interested, I just finished reading Joe Hill's Heart-Shaped Box. I'm reading Bonk by Mary Roach, who wrote Stiff about cadavers. This is about sexual research. And I'm reading My Life in Rock and Roll by Steve Almond.
All right. So there you go. And so forth. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. Still to come, we have today's top five we will get to. Also, Geek Watch, Taser Watch, and so forth. And we'll talk to our good friend Cheryl Kanakoa here in just a few about Mad Men. We'll have sort of a second part recap for a specific purpose. At the news desk, it is Don Taylor, ladies and gentlemen.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
A federal magistrate decided that a former federal probation officer will remain in jail until his sexual abuse case is decided. Mark John Walker, 51, of Eugene, Oregon, admitted breaking the terms of a deal that initially allowed him to remain free. He was charged Wednesday. Walker was arrested Friday and was being held in the Lane County Jail. He was transported to Portland, where he was told he should stay behind bars for failing to comply with the conditions of his pretrial release. Walker is charged with sexually abusing five women who he supervised during his 22-year career as a federal probation officer in Eugene. He's also accused of lying to FBI investigators. Assistant U.S. Attorney Hannah Horsley would not say what release condition Walker disobeyed. The magistrate determined that Walker is a flight risk who would be detained without bail until his case is resolved. During Walker's initial court appearance, Acosta allowed him to remain free as long as he did not travel outside Oregon, wore an electronic monitoring bracelet, and complied with several other rules.
See, this seems like one of those situations where the explosive collar or something would totally be justified if it was a sort of geographically based thing. You know what I mean? Where you get outside your home county and, suddenly, you're light an ankle or something.
Ironically, when Walker was a probation officer, he had the authority to recommend to a federal judge that people under his supervision should be jailed if they violated the conditions of their probation.
Hey, I got this sent to me yesterday, and it all kind of ties together. I was just talking to Greg about the shaving thing, and I'm assuming they're talking about the facial hair, because you and I discussed this yesterday about the leverage thing.
Well, they just say they want to shave you. That could be anywhere.
Well, maybe I'm Dean Devlin's type. Who knows? Who's to say? Maybe he just said, hey, I was watching that Outlook Portland, and that's a nice piece of pastrami I just saw there.
You may have one line, but really you're there to service Timothy Hutton.
Isn't everyone? Really, that's why humanity is here, Don. Somebody sent this to me because I was mentioning yesterday, you had asked about the length of my sideburns, and I said, well, I was going to get them sort of kneaded up a little bit, but that I wasn't going to do anything with the length because I figured I would leave them long and then I could always cut them if I had to. But if they somehow wanted that and I'd already shaved them off, then I was going to be screwed. So somebody just sent me this, and it was just sort of an adjunct to that. He said, are you going to be using this razor? Listen to this now, and I'm not making this up. This is from, I think it's from USA Today. Shave Mate, which I believe is a company that manufactures razors, in its efforts to break into a market dominated by Schick and Gillette, it's hard to believe that this isn't a fabricated story, but it's not. Has recently introduced the I swear to Christ, the ShaveMate Titan 6, which has six blades. Six blades now it has.
This is not necessary.
It's not just the blade, says Lou Tomasetti, who along with his brother Peter invented the Titan. It's really everything you need in one. The Titan, he explains, also comes with shaving cream in the handle and a moisture strip. Here's this is just a little trade secret for me to you. That moisture strip, it does nothing. No. That's just that's bupkis is what that is. We are effectively...
It just gets gooey and is disgusting later after you've used the razor a few times.
See, and that's the thing, is that thing never comes clean. It just becomes... It's like a gelatinous blob at the end of your razor that you're just moving over your face.
Yeah. It's gross.
I would rather have, if you're going to put time and energy into creating different shaving accoutrements, you just make that bathroom buddy thing from Gremlins. I could go with that. He says, if you go out to try to buy equipment for shaving today, it's very complicated. Shave Mate is really a lifestyle change. It's a shaving revolution. And then they go on to give a history of the multi-bladed razor. It was when do you suppose that the second blade, well, see... Let me ask you this, Don.
Okay.
I was gonna preface this by saying it's
walk me through the blades.
I'm really not gonna do that so much as I'm gonna pry into your personal life some more. Okay. And I was about to apologize, but I mean, that ship has.
It's too late for that.
That ship sailed long ago.
I have no pride left.
When you home, I have no home. When you do the shaving of, let's say, your legs or your underarm area, uh-huh. Presuming that you do that, and I don't know. I don't want to.
I do it as little as possible, but, you know.
Well,
again,
I'm saying, when you got to shave.
I'm married and I wear pants, but, you know.
Do you ever?
There's a reason for this.
So is that a thing? Like, do you use the blade or you do use, because they make, like, electric shavers for, like, women's legs and stuff, and I don't think they ever work. You know, I've never actually seen, other than my mom when I was growing up, I never seen a woman who actually had like an electric razor for that. It's always with the blade.
Yeah. No, I use disposable razors.
Now, is it a single blade, double, triple?
I believe it's a double. My husband and I buy packets of razors, and he uses most of them, and I grab one occasionally and put it in my drawer and use it for various razor functions.
Do you do the thing where it's the plastic bag of like 15 disposable razors for $2.99?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. See, and that is what I will do every now and again if I've forgotten to shave and I'm on my way somewhere. Like every now and again, I will leave the house and I will totally forget to shave. Or like I'll get a haircut or they'll get my sideburns or something, which then reveals like a brand new patch that needs to be cut. So that's when I hit. Like you go to the plant pantry and they'll screw you. It's like $7 for like a single razor. So instead, you go to Safeway and you get the big bag of it or whatever.
Yeah.
So when would you imagine that they developed the second blade on razors? That they went from one blade to two?
I think that was that the 1970s?
It was 1971, Don okay. Taylor, and then that was fine. That worked for everybody for 27 years. Then in 1998, they introduced the Mach 3. And here's I remember the Mach 3 coming out, and I, for whatever reason, that was one of those things that I legitimately bought into for like a month or so. I went, well, it's fantastic. It's got three blades. It's three times as awesome. But then it was like 3 years after that, the Gillette, it was the moment that I really realized that we had just gone around the bend in terms of how many blades you actually need to shave is like 3 years after the Mach 3, because that's when Gillette put that five-blade thing, the Fusion, and where it not only had, I mean, that's when you've officially reached some level of absurdity, where you've got five blades on the thing, and then the Fusion also was battery-operated, so like as you were shaving, you'd press some button on the back of it, and it would just do kind of a little just sort of vibrate back and forth. And I remember buying the Fusion when it first came out. And in my own defense, I think it might have been for a radio bit. I'm not entirely sure. But buying the five-blade Fusion, pressing the button on the back, the thing vibrating, and just having this moment of clarity, standing there in the shower with a five-blade vibrating razor and thinking to myself, I am an idiot. I have just been swindled by the razor company. I have just been horked, but good for this thing. And then realizing at that point that there was there was really no need to own that.
The real benefit to the twin or triple blade razor is that because you have several different blades like sort of sandwiched next to each other, you can actually run the thing across your skin without having to be too delicate with it, because it's that sort of thing of physics that it's not going to it can't bend down into your skin and cut you as easily because it's like a flat plane that you're dragging across. And I learned this when I had used like double-bladed razors for years. And then one day got the single-blade disposable Bic shavers and shaved my legs in the shower and just went slice up the front of my shin. And just bled everywhere and then had to get out of the tub and look for something. And I was looking for bandages and things, and I left. And then one of my roommates went into the bathroom. He's like, "What the hell? It looks like you killed someone in here."
Jesus.
There were just big droplets of blood all over the floor. It was horrible.
And see, and that's the, and it sort of ends up being a wash because women have lots more places that they got to shave, theoretically. Whereas, but with the thing with the guys, though, is like if you cut yourself, it's like, you got a couple choices. You can either do that jazz where you stick the toilet paper on your face. But the downside of that, though, is, and every guy knows what I'm talking about, you stick the toilet paper in your face, you will forget it. You'll forget that it's there. Because the thing is, you can't stick it on there and then take it off right away. Because if you take it off right away, it hasn't stopped the blood flow.
Right.
If you take it off like 5 minutes later, you just go kunk and you just tear like a forming scab off and then it hurts all over again. The only option is to let it sit for a while, at which point you will lose track of the fact that your face is dotted with bits of soggy, bloody paper. And then you'll go to the office and you'll can't quite figure out why everybody's looking at you strangely. And then you look in a mirror and you go, and then you just cover it with specks.
Whatever happened to the styptic pencil?
I was just going to say, or option number two is the styptic pencil, which is what I do. And the styptic pencil is a thing that is known to men of my father's generation, which for some reason seems to have fallen out of favor.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's painful, but I mean, so's life. So's an epilady. So are any number of things that we do to our bodies to try to look better or passable. The styptic pencil, if you haven't used it, is basically, it looks like a piece of classroom chalk, but it's sort of rounded at one end, kind of like a real soft pencil. And you get it wet, and you just touch it to an area that's bleeding. And first of all, it is like you've just filled your skin with termites. I mean, it hurts like an MF-er. It hurts like nobody's. It's like you've just set yourself on fire. But you know what? I'll be goddamned if the bleeding doesn't just stop instantly. The only problem with the styptic pencil, apart from the excruciating pain, is that if you have a large enough nick or cut on your face, you touch the styptic pencil to it, and again, it hurts. It hurts a lot. It's like using alcohol or something. The bleeding stops instantly, but then it does so by some weird chemical process that then turns the cut area like pitch black.
This is coagulating the
I
blood?
Think so.
What is it doing?
I think it accelerates the coagulating, or maybe it adds, like an alum type chemical that is an artificial coagulant. But the thing is, it just turns the blood like this. It looks like someone's taken a magic marker to your face. Like you got big black dots all over you, or like you've got smallpox or something. It's no good. Have you used a styptic pencil?
No.
Oh, it hurts like a bastard. Just for the benefit
It is. It's a anti-hemorrhagic.
Yeah.
It's
for the benefit of anybody who has used a styptic pencil and who knows how much they hurt and what kind of agony that causes you, I will simply relay the following small anecdote. That anecdote is this. A couple years ago, I was bicycling on my way to Entercom. I was going to – I think I'd gone home and I was going back to work. Bicycling and something happened where it's like the bike got – I was trying to cross some railroad tracks and I picked the wrong angle. Anyway, the wheels lock. I get pitched off the bike and I was not wearing my biking gloves. And so I do the thing that you're not supposed to do, but you do anyway. You put your hand out to break your fall. And the hand just hits a bunch of gravel and it just takes all of this like, you know, just takes all of these chunks out of my hand. And my hand is immediately just, you know, it's just it's like that Julia Child sketch on SNL where, it's, you know, just, blood is just everywhere. And I'm like, ah, crap. Fortunately, I'm right down the street from Entercom. The bicycle there, run to the lobby, run into the men's room, you know, the unisex thing, and lock the door. And then, you know, I'm just running it under the water and it hurts and it's all kinds of pain. And here's the other thing is like when you're bleeding from an injury or something like that, when you nick yourself or you cut yourself or like you get a paper cut or maybe you chew your nails and you'll start to bleed, the bleeding seems strangely embarrassing in some way, at least to me anyway. It's like you don't want to be – because you don't want to be walking around the office dripping blood.
Yeah.
I mean that's just horrible. It's off-putting. It's horrifying. And you don't want to be like, I don't know, Emerson's just dripping blood for no reason. I don't know why. There's a trail of blood leading to his desk. It's the damnedest thing. So you want to stop it because it feels like everybody's looking at you. So you men out there will know the pain of the styptic pencil. And so you will then appreciate that what I did is I have my shaving kit with me because I was kind of carrying my bag. And I reach into the side pocket and I take out this long styptic pencil. And I just have this long moment where time sort of stops. And I look from the styptic pencil, which is like a little tiny piece of chalk, like a rolling pin or something. I look at it and I look at my hand and I look at it and I look at my hand. And I run it under the water and I look at it and I look at my hand some more. Probably 5,000 or 6,000 times. And then finally, I just did that, you know, it's just that sort of it's that sort of Tom Hanks in Castaway thing where he's knocking out the tooth, where I finally just say, okay, well, before I lose my nerve, I better just, gah! And then I just put, and I just rubbing it back in my hand. And it was like someone had put my hand into an anthill. I mean, it was just the worst. It was like getting your hand caught, like literally from the frying pan to the fire. But I'll tell you what, my hand, although it was blackened and crusty for the rest of the day, did not bleed anymore. And that's one to grow on, kids. All right, there you go. The next time you cut yourself, you ought to get a styptic pencil, just have it around. The next time you cut yourself, so you can just use it to appreciate the miraculous yet painful nature of it.
I have experienced pain of various kinds before, though. And so just to actually just court that.
No, I'm just saying it's like the next time it happens. So anyway, so there you go. So there now is a 6-blade razor out, is my point, which I, which you don't need to. Here, the other.
Well, when the 2-blade razors, when they were doing their ads in the 70s, and they were saying, the first blade lifts up the thing and cuts off. And the second
That's a
was
lie.
And Saturday Night Live did a commercial parody then with like a 3 or 4-blade razor, yeah, making fun of how the first one just lifts up. The second one lifts it up a little bit more and wiggles it back and forth. The third one. And then, of course, a few years later, there is a 3-blade razor. And you're like, wasn't this made fun of on television years ago?
And there are two other things about that before we end it. One is you're talking about the alleged moisture strip or whatever they called it, which is, it just becomes goo. The second thing is that every razor after the first one, you have to do the thing where you have to immediately take time out of your busy life to like rinse it or like clean it out with like an old toothbrush or something. Because otherwise, you get like the old whiskers that just solidify in there as though they've become petrified. I mean, it's like some La Brea tar pit of your own facial hair.
Cleaning things is hard and difficult.
It sucks. Well, because you don't ever really think about it until you pick it up. Then you go, well, why isn't this shaving? And you look down and it's just been coagulated with. And then, but see, what you do then is you just, what they probably intend for you to do is just throw it away and go on to the next one. Yeah. I moved back to electric, and I have not regretted that once. So
sometimes you just want to clean things.
I have just
or pay somebody to clean things for you.
I see where you're going, and I like it. But let me just also say that the idea, it does seem like a strangely primitive thing in some ways, that you have to wake up and literally just scrape your face with a blade until part of your epidermis is gone. It seems strangely Neanderthal, and I know that you have a weird fixation with, quote, wanting facial hair.
I don't have a weird fixation with it.
How did you call it? What was the phrase you used?
I just thought I envy it occasionally, the idea of having that as an option.
Is it because you like to have the option of another part of your body to style? Is that the thing?
I like the idea of being able to like modify my appearance in different ways. The thing is, as a female, you're kind of stuck with this whole slapping petroleum products on your face sort of a thing, and whereas I like the sort of, it would be nice to be able to like choose to have a goatee or a mustache or some sort of a beard.
Let me ask you this: if in some alternate reality, if in other words, I could make you like a man long enough to sort of to know what it's like to have facial hair, but you could only pick, and you had to pick it before the transformation happened. You had to pick the facial hair style, Van Dyke goatee, the Hetfield, maybe the whole neck beard. Maybe a Merlin Olsen beard. What would you go with?
I'd probably want the whole Alan Rickman in Die Hard kind of sinister, goatee mustache.
Sort of a closely trimmed, but I mean, covering most of the face, but very, very trimmed, very kempt.
Yes.
If you were your husband, what would you like? What would your facial hair?
I don't know. He has such a big happy Boy Scout face. He doesn't have a good face for facial hair, I don't think.
Is it that he looks
keeps
bad?
He keeps trying to grow it, and he and I, one thing we both have in common, we are very pale Irish people, and we don't get very hairy anywhere on our bodies. And so he tries to grow facial hair, and it just doesn't work. But he keeps trying.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't laugh. As another man, it's wrong of me to laugh at that. I'm sorry, Patrick.
And he'll let it grow, and he just ends up at best looking a little like Shaggy and Scooby-Doo this scraggly crap coming out of the end of his chin. And you can't even tell that there's any kind of a mustache there, but then he'll kiss me and it'll poke me and it'll hurt. That's pretty much it.
And is it also of a light enough color that you don't really see it so much as you feel it abrading your face?
Yeah. And so, you know, but he'll keep trying because he really would love to have facial hair.
Has he ever?
But he's never been able to achieve it. And I think he just keeps thinking about every 6 months, if he lets it grow, maybe as he gets older, he'll get hairier somehow magically.
Was there a time maybe before he met you where you were not around to force him into shaving, and he let it go for like a good 5-6 months, just full on, and just, you know?
Oh, he's done crap like, well, I don't know about 5 or 6 months, but even after we were together. I remember I drew a cartoon of him once with him just like with this shaggy, thick, goofy-looking hair and the Shaggy and Scooby-Doo facial hair, and it wasn't pretty.
All right.
But, you know, he was a bachelor for a long time.
Well, I'm sort of curious about these things. So it's I don't have facial hair now really to any demonstrable degree. And I did. I went through a couple of phases where I was thinking, you know, maybe that'll work for me. And then, no. And also because I was just so spectacularly ill-advised at that point. I mean, that was sort of a pre-Sarah time of my life. And I didn't realize that unless you are like a BG, you can't have really the facial hair and the long hair at the same time. It doesn't really work for most guys. You just look. I mean, if you're like some big sort of like Grizzly Adams looking bastard, then I guess. But I'm not.
Or Jesus.
Yes, or Jesus or Jonathan Colton. But if you are not consciously going for that sort of like 70s artist look, it doesn't really work. And so now that I've got short hair, I could theoretically do it. But see, here's the creeping horror of the facial hair. And a lot of men know this pain. The reason that I can now not do the facial hair, even though I've got the short hair, is, as with most guys, your gray hair comes into the facial hair first. Because I don't really have much. I mean, I got like a stray gray hair on my head every now and again, but I don't really have much in the way of gray hair. It's I don't color my hair or anything. I've not gone gray for whatever reason. Probably will at some point. Have it now. Let the beard come in. It's all gray. It's just full. It's just set. You know, so it's like up top, youthful. Down below, decrepit. So I don't. That's just the thing I don't
like
do.
Like Michael McDonald. How he got there for a while.
It's exactly like Michael McDonald. Michael McDonald and I have, we have much in common. All right. Let me just take a moment to talk about, I don't know, Don handed me a segue and then I just squandered it. So I'm just going to say this. It's all I can do, speaking of, like the bathroom and the razor or whatever. You know, it's like you get like the sink, after I shake the whiskers out of my electric shaver or something. And that really is just a matter of turning on the tap. I mean, that's not even really cleaning so much as it is just like moving my wrist one way and then the other a few seconds later. And even that's just excruciatingly difficult because I'm just a lazy freaking American. So, is it at any point I can have cleaning done by somebody else? By God, I'm going to do it. Much less the whole house. I mean, thank you. No. And so if you've ever wanted to have people for that, now you can, and it's easier than you might imagine. You just pick up the phone and you dial 971-533-3211. That is the number for the cleaning solution. That is company owned by our good friend, listener, and sponsor, Mr. Michael Beatty. And it's a locally owned and operated company. And, to the extent that actually most of their equipment and supplies come from right here in Portland. I think I told this story last hour, but the first time I talked to him, he was actually busy in the garage moving like 15 cases of Viso or something from one side of the garage to the other. So he's been a fan of the show for a long time. And they do all kinds of things. I mean, we talk a lot about your house and, if you got like staining from like your pet or your kid or you've just spilled something or whatever. They do that, but they'll also handle the cleaning at your business as well. So if you work in an office building where maybe you've just got people coming in day and night, or perhaps they're lugging in a refrigerator and setting it down on the rug only to remove that refrigerator and replace it with yet another refrigerator a few days later, this might be a place where you've got a little cleaning that needs to be done. Or if you do that, unless you're some, like real OCD, like my mom type about it, where you're constantly moving the furniture around, the other thing is you get that path. And it's the path that goes like right from the front door of your house to whatever the next place is you usually go, like the kitchen or something. And there's just like the tracking from in and out all day long. And it just becomes, it just gets sort of a, just like a bad funk going on there. You don't want that. You call Michael, Cleaning Solution will take care of the whole thing. 971-533-3211. Please do tell him you heard about it here. 971-533-3211, a proud sponsor of the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It is the Cleaning Solution. That is 971-533-3211. The Cleaning Solution.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
I think it's time that we do our taser watch.
Fantastic. Hold on a second. Let me, all right, there we go. Here's your taser watch for, well, I guess technically for Wednesday. Your taser watch for Wednesday right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Don't forget the taser watch is brought to you by mugshotlist.com. Mugshotlist.com, of course, run by a listener named Andy. And the mugshot list is updated around the clock, so if somebody is arrested, if they are taken downtown and booked on suspicion of some crime or other, you're going to see their photo up at Mugshot List almost immediately, because that site is maintained 24 hours a day, so it is constantly updated. They cover 19 counties in Oregon and 13 states, including Florida, Georgia, Texas, and Ohio. Mugshotlist.com, proud sponsors of this Taser Watch. By the way, our chief of staff, Cheryl Kenneco, is here. Are you perusing mugshotlist.com? That was a that was an unnerving photo you just showed me there. Yeah, he's got the bad beard and the sideways mohawk, and he's got like an odd eye.
Oh, and he's got a weird eye.
Yeah. No. All right, there you go. Here's Don Taylor.
A Montville, Maine man was arrested Saturday night after he punched his girlfriend's car windshield, refused to obey police commands, and was stunned into submission by a taser. The man, Toby J. Davis, 33, was charged with refusing to submit to arrest with physical force, criminal threatening, domestic violence, criminal mischief, and sale and use of drug paraphernalia, all Class D misdemeanors. Police Chief Jeffrey Fenlinson said that the trouble started when a 33-year-old woman picked up Davis, her boyfriend, from a bar in Waterville. Davis, who was intoxicated, got into an argument with the woman and then punched the inside of the windshield, causing quite a bit of damage and leaving quite a few cracks, Fenlinson said. At 11:14 p.m., the woman pulled her 2004 Ford Focus over near VIP Auto beside a Winslow police cruiser. The frantic woman was yelling and crying, saying, "He won't get out of my car. Get him out of my car," Fenlinson said. Officer Haley Fleming ordered Davis to get out, which he did, but Davis then repeatedly refused to sit down on the curb, as Fleming asked. Davis started raising his fist and said, "Don't touch me," and Officer Fleming believed he was going to punch him in the face. Davis continued to be combative, so Fleming used his taser gun on Davis and placed him under arrest without further incident. Police said they also found a marijuana smoking pipe on
Davis. Here's something that was posted to my Facebook page, and I haven't really had a chance to see what the story there is. Our good friend Seamus posted something, and it was either a shotgun taser or a taser shotgun. I don't really suppose it makes much difference. The two words being put together is sort of awesome in any context. And I there was some accompanying video. So at some point I have to go back and watch it and actually see what sort of exciting new weapon this is. But it's good to know that taser technology marches forward and ever onward so that we'll be graced with these stories for some time to come.
Well, this fellow refused to be transported to the hospital as a precaution and was instead taken to Kennebec County Jail and then released after posting $500 in cash bail on Sunday. He's scheduled to appear in court on December 21st. So apparently they let you go for a long time in Maine.
Is he going to be released on his own recognizance, or they got him in a cell until December 21st?
No, he posted bail. He doesn't have to come back to... And I actually can send you this if you want to post this to the website as a visual aid. But here, I think you appreciate his mugshot.
Wow. Okay, so first of all, this is a guy who is obviously unbelievably drunk, and I didn't think they let you make faces in your mugshot. It looks as though... imagine for a moment that you are a baby and one of your retarded relatives is looking down into the bassinet going, "Who's the good, 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 bad?" And then somebody took a photograph of, oh, and also he's drunk and kind of weird looking to begin with, and he's got a mo haircut. That's what this guy's mugshot is. It's like an action pose, but the act is idiocy. I thought that the man just sort of told you to shut up and keep your facial expressions to yourself and stand still for a goddamn second while I take this photograph.
I guess it's sometimes they're just like, just get him out of here. Just whatever.
They must just figure they'll come back in and just get one of these unconscious later. All right, well, there you go. So there's that. There's your taser watch brought to you by mugshotlist.com. That's fantastic. All right. I'll tell you what, take a small break here on the other side. We will have our top five and a little bit of a further discussion about Sunday's episode of Mad Men and so forth. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program right here on the Emerson News Network. Don't go anywhere. We return here in just a moment. You stay right there. It's the Rick Emerson radio show. Oh, that's a total fail on the button there. Wait, let's try it now. Oh, this is my, you know, this is my karma for making fun of the soundbite you were trying to play earlier today.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
That's what happens.
That really is it. That's what happens when you, it's what happens when you mock.
Vindication.
Thank you. I appreciate that. All right. Thanks so much. Thanks. All right. Let's try it one more time. And
is that it? Said it now?
You know,
dancing diva.
God damn. All right. I think I might actually edit that little part out before we before we play this. All right, there we go.
I've got a theory.
Thank you.
That it's a demon, a dancing demon. Something isn't right there.
Back out of this.
I've got a theory. Some kid is dreaming, and we're all stuck inside his wacky Broadway nightmare.
I've got a theory. We should work this out.
It's getting eerie, what's this cheery singing all about?
It could be witches, some evil witches. Which is ridiculous, cause witches, they were persecuted. Wicked, good, and love the earth and women power, and I'll be over here.
I've got a theory, it could be bunnies. I've got a...
Bunnies aren't just cute like everybody supposes. They got them hoppy legs and twitchy little noses. And what's with all the carrots? What do they need such good eyes?
Maybe midgets.
I've got a theory. We should work this fast.
Because it clearly could get serious before it's past.
I've got a theory. It doesn't matter. What can't we face if we're together? What's in this place that we can't weather? Apocalypse. We've all been there, the same old trips. Why should we care?
What can't we do if we get in it? We'll work it through within a minute. We have to try, we'll pay the price. It's do or die.
Hey, I died twice.
What can't
No, it's funny because it's true. It's the Rick Emerson radio program. There you go. That's and that is simply and solely being played right there because it's, the bunnies part of that has been, and it's just the bunnies part. It's not anything else from the rest of the song. It is just the bunnies part. I've been stuck in my head all day today and for the better part of yesterday as well. So there we go. And now I have finally exorcised it. You are listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. We'll do the top five here in just a few. The top five is going to be, it's the second half of a, sort of a two-part top five where Don and I each tackled the same theme, which is the best live show, the greatest live show, and the best concert that you ever attended. So we'll get to that here in just a few. Without further ado, Before we get to anything else, I actually want to welcome to the Rick Emerson program somebody that a lot of you have dealt with electronically in one form or another as we have launched this exciting new phase of the program's existence. Our Chief of Staff, Cheryl Kanakawa. Hello there. How are you?
I'm good.
What do you have the brand? Is that a new flavor of Viso you're holding in your hand?
It is Viso Star Diet.
And
I guess it's the energy one.
And Viso Star. Okay, so that is. Is it the same? Well, that exists in the can.
But it's a new formulation of Star. It's blood orange and passion fruit.
Okay, now. That explains it because, you know, I haven't been a big Viso fan, so I thought, well, I'll try it when they got the cans, and they had the Star in the cans.
Right.
But I think I told you it tasted kind of like old orange juice, like when it's just about to go bad.
Right.
So I saw the bottles, and I thought, well, I'm going to give the bottles a try. And I bought this because it was on sale, and it is the best thing ever.
Okay, and so where did you get the? Well, see, you don't live around here.
I went to Fancy Pants New Seasons Market
because that's the thing. They don't they don't have it on the east side. First of all, so everybody who has said that they found the Viso in the bottle, and I look, it's not like I'm not keeping an eye out for it. Has said that they found it on the west side, specifically mm-hmm. places like Zupan's. You know, that they've been able to track it down there. So, see, now I got to...
Was Orenco out by Hillsboro, New Seasons.
All right. So I have to redouble my efforts to locate
it
that.
It is mighty tasty.
Well, somebody said, because, you know, the thing about Alex is he had reformulated that, I think, because it was originally in bottles and then he'd gone to cans. And I think there was something about the way that maybe it interacted with the aluminum or with the lining of the can or something. Mm-hmm. So he had to sort of change the... he had to kind of change the formula a little bit. And I think he's gone back to whatever it was for some of those now. And plus, there's the passion fruit thing, which I think Scott Daly said that he had.
Yeah, which might be this.
I mean, it tastes fresh. It tastes like fresh juice.
Well, this
that's
is
what
that,
I like about it.
So, okay, so
yeah,
it was
passion fruit.
Okay, so when he said it was passion fruit, so he was actually referring to Star. So it wasn't like some solely passion fruit flavor. Because mm-hmm. I was going to be all embittered that there is a brand new, like out of the gate flavor altogether that he
had.
Yeah,
no, this is a combo orange juice. And passion. It's really good.
All right, so here's, I suppose you're wondering why I've asked you here, and the answer is this. It's because I got this, I got this email. Was it last night or was it this morning? When is it that you texted me about Mad Men?
Last night. Yeah, yesterday afternoon while I was watching it.
So, for those who don't know, there was this regrettable, if entirely understandable, incident that happened, I don't know, maybe a year ago, maybe something like that, and it, where I had... In a moment of trying to explain to people, because you've obviously, you know, you've been a part of Outlook Portland, assisting me on that show for a long time, and really just helping out in a number of ways. And I was trying to explain to somebody exactly what role it was that you sort of filled, you know, what function you performed. And, of course, there's so many functions that they cannot even be explicated or listed because you're so massively useful.
Right.
And you demonstrate your competency
as
in so
no,
many areas.
Like, you're just like, right.
Uh-huh.
And so I hit upon the phrase that you were the Peggy to my Don Draper. Now, we'll leave aside the fact that I'm not nearly cool enough to be Don Draper, but I felt that the describing you as Peggy part of that equation actually worked. And so then we had this whole, and not everybody felt that way, I guess.
Really,
Rick
people.
Emerson was alone. I thought it was a compliment.
No.
So fast forward then. To last night when you're watching Sunday's Mad Men, and Don and I had already talked about what a great episode it was in many ways, but the only comment I got from you about it was you said that you were like pissed off all over again because Peggy was an idiot, in your
yeah.
opinion.
Yeah.
So, and see, it's very telling that and I can't speak for Don, but I actually came away from Sunday's Mad Men with entirely the opposite point of view.
Really?
Yeah. That I mean, having watched Mad Men on Sunday, I felt like that Peggy was really once again kind of taking, even more than she has in the past, that she was kind of taking her destiny into her own hands. That she was, in other words, it might have worked out poorly. There was that whole, and spoiler if you haven't seen Sunday's Mad Men, that it might have worked out badly,
mm-hmm.
but that she did have this great idea for for getting sales up for this client, this
right.
ham company or whatever, and it sort of went all wonky in the end. But that faced with a difficult task, she took initiative and she pursued it in an unorthodox fashion.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't wait for anybody's approval. See, really, now the more I say it out loud, the more it sounds like a compliment to me.
She was doing one of the early viral marketing.
Exactly.
I get that.
But see, more importantly, and I think Don would back me up on this, that she actually didn't wait for Don Draper's permission. She didn't wait for a man to give her the permission to do it.
Uh-huh.
She made her own road.
But you see how they phrase it, like, okay, so she does this, she escapes, you know, she doesn't ask Don if it's okay with him. And what happens? Like, it blows up.
Are you
it
saying,
blows up.
So are you saying the implication is that without Dawn there to guide her, that she doesn't know what she's doing, and that's why you found it insulting?
Yes. I have a problem with the way Matthew Weiner.
I believe it is Weiner, actually.
Weiner. I have a problem with the way he's writing Peggy. I just feel like, you know, I mean, yeah, in the end, they up their, you know, budget, their advertising budget with the company and everything. But it, you know, it blew up, essentially, and she had to grovel, call Dawn, like, oh, Dawn, please rescue me. And that's what drives me nuts about her.
I will say this. While I do stand by my assertion that I think she is gradually becoming a more fully developed authoritative person, I will say there's something there was a thing that kind of bugged me about Sunday's episode. Not that it doesn't make sense, because it does, given the tenor of the times. And, you know, I was still, you know, in a time of you know, of great inequality, where she goes because she had to bail one of the actresses out of jail from the ham confrontation or whatever. And I know this sounds like gibberish if you didn't watch Mad Men. But the point is, then she goes to Don's apartment to get the money from him to bail them out. And Don just reads her the riot act. And at no point does she note that she bailed his idiot ass out of jail after he was in a car wreck with what was it? The Utz potato chip woman? Was that who it was?
Well, that's always my problem with the whole. I love Mad Men, but that's always my problem. Like with the whole Don Draper thing, you know, Don's okay with it until all of a sudden the whole gay thing blows up a little bit, and all of a sudden he's like, "You people," and you know, he just turns on Sal and's like, "This is what happens when you people, you know, do your little business."
That
you
he
know?
Does not demonstrate loyalty.
Yeah, and here's Don who is sleeping with anything in a skirt that walks past him with a little breeze, and you know, that's how he is. Like
he's a huge hypocrite.
Right, but they
like
never
calling
nobody
Betty a whore.
Ever calls him on it, and I'm waiting for that one time where like, and Peggy's a good person to do it. Turn around and call him on. You know, this BS.
Which she kind of has done, and I get your point that she doesn't follow through on. In other words, as she always does at the end of the day, kind of go back to him, as she did in that episode where she said, like, you know, the line that really kind of made my skin crawl, not because it rang false, but because it rang true, is that line where she said, you know, that we're all here because of you. All we want to do is please you. And I was, I just felt so bad that she had actually had to say that out loud. But it's interesting that she has stood up to him a couple times over the last season and this season. But then she always undercuts it by, at the end, giving in to him.
Exactly.
I hadn't really thought about that.
And that's the role of Peggy through the entire series has been, you kind of are annoyed by her. You think she just kind of, you know, she's indecisive. And then all of a sudden she'll suddenly come out and be Power Woman. And you go, oh, you know, I like this Peggy character. She's going in a good direction. And then she'll do something stupid again. Like, you know, having a, you know, one night stand.
Who is the guy with her? If I missed something, who is the guy introduces her fiancé?
Wasn't that the underling?
Isn't that the guy she picked up in the bar? At the end of last season?
I cannot remember. For the life of me, I couldn't figure out who he was because he's not really her fiancé.
He could just be another
I wasn't paying
boy.
Attention at that moment. I thought it was the guy that was helping her.
I thought he worked with her. That was my thing. I couldn't quite, yeah.
Yeah, that's why I thought it was.
All right.
But she makes just poor decision after poor decision, and that's why I didn't want to be compared to her because I said, look at Peggy's track record. She's had an affair with, you know, the skeeviest guy working.
With Pete, and then with Duck.
Pete.
And then with Duck.
Thank you, Duck.
I just want to take that off with
my
teeth.
She's had the one night stand. She's, you know, she's gotten pregnant, dumped the kid with the sister, and where, you know, like, she
all
just
right,
pretends
no,
like,
no,
okay,
I can
we're
see
moving
that.
On now.
Yeah.
I think, though, that this is, you know, Peggy is representing sort of nascent feminism in a pre-feminist era where she is charting, you know, new territory that women really haven't before. And then when you look at where she comes from, you know, with the very religious mother and the really sheltered upbringing. Mm-hmm. And so it's, I think, you know, she's an interesting character to me because she is going in certain directions without any role models at all. So I think the idea that, yeah, she screws up a lot and yes, she still is looking at a man as a daddy figure to help guide her while she's still figuring out her own way and is making these huge strides, you know, in ways that, you know, many other, but it's like she's looking at, you know, Christina Hendricks' character as a role model for a while. And certainly she's a strong woman, but she's also a strong woman that plays a very traditional female role.
Right.
And so I think what they're really trying to do with Peggy is also show that, you know, women of that era who were trying to make their way in the business world, you know, as individuals, she has no one to look at as a role model at all. Mm-hmm. So, of course, she's going to make a lot of really amazingly stupid choices, I think.
Okay, but you just said the magic word stupid, so can you see why I might have a problem being called Peggy?
Okay, I just fair enough. All right, I guess I can see where you're coming from. I just
by the way, Kelly called me Peggy again in an email. I cannot shake the Peggy title.
I meant it in the nicest way. My final observation before we end the Man Med thing and then go to the top five is that something that you just actually touched on that it had really not occurred to me is. Because that is a hole where you see what you want to see in the guy. And I think especially men maybe are this way with Don Draper. It had not really occurred to me that – that as much as we project onto him this idea of a more glamorous, graceful, noble, honorable time when men were men and lived by their word and whatever, that he really isn't actually loyal to anybody. I hadn't thought about that.
No.
And not only is he not loyal to people who have helped him, but like in the case of Pete Campbell, he actively will bring along or court people who have undermined him in the past if they can benefit him in that moment. I hadn't really thought about that.
No, his entire existence is a sham, and he has no loyalty for anyone, and he's a huge hypocrite. He has one set of standards for himself and another set of standards for everyone else.
Yeah.
So he's really is a fairly vile person, and I think it's the writing and also John Hamm. That you have to credit with making him at all likable, because he's really a pretty despicable person.
Yeah, I kept thinking about that because, you know, women always say, ooh, you know, Don Draper, John Hamm. I thought, wait, why do we like him? Like, he is, like, just, he's despicable.
Yeah. Well, because he does embody a lot of dark charisma. He does have a lot of, because he has a lot of traits that are sort of related to traits that you would find endearing. Good traits and bad traits are actually not that far apart from one another. I think all the things that make Don Draper a terrible person are very closely related to. They are mirror images of the traits that would make him. His bad and good traits are very similar to one another. Twins almost. That would be my take on it.
So have we decided that we're not going to call Cheryl Peggy anymore?
I have never called you Peggy.
Can I out that Peggy is friendless? Every relationship she has is awkward and, you know.
She's kind of slutty.
And for the record.
She's slutty? Thank you.
Only did it the one time. I didn't do it ever again because I got smacked down
radio,
so hard
you're
after
on
that.
Television. People notice and pay attention and take note of these things.
Yeah, but it's not like I've been calling you Peggy since then is my point.
How come people keep calling me Peggy?
Take it up with them, for the love of God. All right.
Wow.
I'm going to continue on now.
Okay, I've got other things to do, Don. See you later.
Right, thank you. That's right. You just keep looking pretty. Are we ready with the top five?
Yes.
Okay, here we go. Let's see. I had to dig up a replacement copy for one of your songs because the MP3 was not functioning properly. And a couple of your cuts are actually giving me a little bit of a problem over here. Let me see if I can. Let's do one additional story here while I replicate one of these and see if that actually solves the problem.
Okay. Can you play a Geek Watch while you do that, or will that mess up your whatever?
Well, let's find out. Let's see if that's at all possible. Here's your Geek Watch. He says, hopefully, waiting for anything to. If only I could. No, it's not really working. All right, well, just
you
we're
could save
close
the
that
top
out.
Five for another day, and I could make sure that my sounds are in better shape.
Would you like to do that?
I could do that.
All right, that's a combination of things. That's a confluence of errors.
All right.
So we'll do that on Thursday. Actually,
I'll
tomorrow.
Make sure I have better quality.
It's just the
MP3s or something.
Yeah, no, it's just the one. It's giving me one of those odd errors about that. So all right, so we'll kind of bring this all to a close here. So forth. I will say a couple things before we wrap all this up. Don't forget that the live stream continues 24/7 as soon as the show is done. It's going to be a brief musical interlude. Then the show will continue around the clock. And also, if you are interested in taking this show with you on your handheld device, if you want to listen to the Rick Emerson mobile stream, you can do that. And just drop an email to tech at rickemerson.com. Tech at rickemerson.com or Bruce at rickemerson.com, and then go to Bruce Agler, who actually is the guy who's sort of helping to run the mobile stream beta test right now. So just do that. Drop an email to tech at rickemerson.com, and we're going to try to get as many people as possible sort of on board as beta testers. And at some point, once we know that there's some stability to the system, then we'll roll it out. So anyway, so we want to thank Kelly Clark for joining us today. Kelly Clark from Willamette Week. Also, Greg Nibbler from Fun Employment Radio, found at funemploymentradio.com. And our chief of staff, Cheryl Kanakoa. This show has been pre-taped for your listening enjoyment. We'll return live on Thursday. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you today and every day from the studios of the Emerson News Network. And chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa, our executive producer, Bruce Agler. Advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill at the news desk. It is Don Taylor. It is Wednesday, theoretically speaking anyway, July 28th, 2010. And that is The Frequency, Kenneth. As always, thanks for listening. Be safe. See you all tomorrow. Bye now.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep is now concluded. Thanks for listening.